a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode, what is this, like 229? Wow, we're almost in like the 230s. That's mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling. All right, it has been a great weekend. Here we go. This is Tuesday. But I didn't really do the weekend recap because yesterday we did an interview with my friend, the brand new priest. And in fact, this show is pretty much going to be a weekend recap. Why? Because there's a ton of stuff I want to talk about that happened over the weekend that I think is really interesting. So I'm just going to use the few experiences that I had over the weekend to have some conversation about some deeper issues and deeper ideas. So without further ado, let's dive in. So I am in, if you missed the show yesterday, I am in St. Louis, Missouri, my old stomping grounds here. And the city is just beautiful right now. It's, I haven't been to the city in a while. I've barely spent any time. I was about 5 years ago. I was living in Cape Girardeau for about a year and a half or 2 years. And I think I came to St. Louis a couple of times. I came every once in a while just to go to Restaurant Depot and Trader Joe's. Or I think I came up to an Over the Rhine show with Kevin Clay at one point at the Rock House. But I just really haven't. I didn't really spend any time, especially. The only time I went into the cool old part of the city was during the nighttime for that show. So it's the first time I really got to spend some time driving around St. Louis since probably, I don't know, like the late 90s, it's been a really long time. And I knew that St. Louis had gone through some serious revitalization, but the city is just absolutely beautiful. And I think that what has changed is I have learned how to live in a city because I've been living in Denver and they seem to be in some ways kind of similar in their layouts and, you know, it's an old European influenced city, and it's interesting. I don't know how to say it. It's like, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I'm from a town of like 4,000 people, Deloge, Missouri, so it's a tiny town with a few other tiny towns around it, out in the middle of nowhere, and everyone that I ever grew up around, 99.6-0.7% of the people I grew up around were white and very European white. Growing up, and I've talked about this on a couple of shows that I've talked about racism and the experience of race. I grew up, black people especially were completely other. They were just, it was just something that I had almost no experience of. Now, like I've said before on the show, it wasn't that I was racist or I disliked black people. They were just conspicuous by their absence. If anything, I had a fascination with black culture. When I was in middle school, I mean, I was into breakdancing and hip hop and went to sleep listening to The Quiet Storm, a Magic 108, you know, listening to like all this like soul music and stuff. I wasn't content with who I was and I wasn't content with the people I was from. And so, I was fascinated with black culture and urban culture in general. But when I would come to St. Louis, I felt so on the outside and so kind of, different that I just, and it was the combination of so many people and traffic and a dense urban thing, and then all these people that looked differently than me that I wasn't used to. It just being a country kid, you know, a white country kid from a little tiny town, it just, the city freaked me out. And I think it was also because mom and dad, you know, and the people that I, the adults that I had gone to the city with were uncomfortable there. And because of all the above. And so they, you had to act differently when you were in the city. I would get yelled at for, you know, or like corrected for saying something because it could be taken wrong or something. You know, it was hammered into my mind as a city is someplace. It's like when you're a little kid and you go to church, there's a different way you're supposed to act or you get in trouble, right? Bad things can happen if you do some of the stuff that's normally okay if you do it in church, right? Well, it's like take that and dial it to 11 and kind of add some fear to it, some deeper fear, because it's not kind of a safe place. That's how I felt in St. Louis growing up. Now, since then, obviously, I've lived on the West Coast. I have lived around and worked with all kinds of people. I've owned a business in a town that's 87% Mexican. You know, I've learned to speak Spanish okay. I've have all kinds of friends from all different races. I've, you know, eaten tons of meals in places where people don't speak English. And it's like, I got out, you know, and I feel way more comfortable outside of my, in fact, I feel uncomfortable in the element I grew up in. I feel comfortable in Denver when I'm in, you know, a context where it's mostly people that look like me. But if I go back to my hometown or to a town like that, it's been so long since I lived in a really tiny town that in the Midwest that I'm actually uncomfortable there now. So it's different. But so this is the first time since this transformation of me living on the West Coast and then living in Denver, living in the middle of a city for the first time, that I'd ever been in St. Louis. And so it's funny. It's interesting seeing this place through the lens of these modern eyes with the history and the memory of what things used to be like for me when I was here, you know. You know, once I was in my 20s, you know, we would come up here and go to the Landing and go to shows and stuff. And I was comfortable on the Landing and I was comfortable going out to the skate park in Cave Springs. I was comfortable, you know, even going down on the Del Mar Loop and running around University City down there, and which I think we're going to go to today to Blueprint Coffee if we have time before the plane. And you know, but if I got over into the actual, like, the core of the city and downtown and everything, like in the neighborhood I'm in right now, this, I would have been very, very uncomfortable. But it's interesting. Now I see, I understand how neighborhood dynamics work. I understand how cultures work and how cultures connect and what the rules are and what are superstitions and what are biases and what is innate racism, what is not. I understand all that now. And so it's funny. I'm more steady in my experience of it. And so I'm able to see kind of all the revitalization that's happening here and the different, I know what it looks like when a city has changed now. And so I'm really appreciating St. Louis. And I kind of had a moment like this not too long ago when I went to the to cathedral and I went to a couple little markets and coffee houses nearby that a friend of mine had told me to check out how beautiful the city was. But now after living, that was before Denver, I think. And now living in Denver for almost 5 years, 4.5 years, I can really, really appreciate what St. Louis is. And I could, if it weren't for the humidity, I could see myself maybe living here at some point. I really, really love the city. It's beautiful. So, man, that was a long, long riff on St. Louis I didn't plan to do. But so it's been a good, yeah, it's been a good time. So I did all my St. Louis stuff. Let's just make this first segment the St. Louis segment. Then we'll get all serious, starting with segment two. So I'm not only serious, but I have some serious things I want to talk about. So far, I've had toasted ravioli, which if you've never had it, is a total St. Louis thing. I don't know. They take ravioli. It's not exactly toasted. I think it's, in fact, deep fried, if I'm not mistaken. And it's kind of got some breadcrumb kind of stuff on it. And then it's dusted with Parmesan cheese ground. And then you dip it in marinara sauce. I mean, it's just like it's at every wedding you've ever been to, every reception, everything. It is St. Louis. Now there, I didn't have moscacioli, which is I think it's this, it's moscacioli, mostacioli. It's a, there's a certain combination of like penne, I think it's penne pasta, stuff like that. And it's like, you never hear it called that anywhere else, but we did have really great lasagna that was kind of similar in flavor. The other thing that is absolute, the two other things that are absolutely St. Louis that I've had was ooey gooey butter cake, which evidently in St. Louis they call gooey butter cake, but where I'm from and in our family it was always called ooey gooey butter cake. And it's just basically a white vanilla cake that someone accidentally put way too much butter in, and it collapsed and made a different texture. And it's sweet, and it gets really good. It's super good. It's a total St. Louis thing. And so they had a gooey butter cake and homemade ice cream at the reception for Father Reginald, and the toasted ravioli at the next day. I get both places. Had bacon wrapped shrimp. That not really a St. Louis thing. Absolutely amazing though. And the last thing I had to have it. Me and mom yesterday went to Emo's Pizza. Oh my gosh. Thin cracker crust with this weird Provel cheese, which is kind of a processed cheese of, you know, it's like, I think it's like Swiss cheddar and provolone or something. It's a weird thing to put on a pizza. I rip on Chicago pizza all the time, not being the real deal, like Neapolitan style wood fired pizza. I don't pretend that Emo's and St. Louis style pizza is real pizza compared to like Italy. It's its own thing, but boy, is it a delicious thing. I used to deliver for Emo's for years and years, and so I have a real soft spot in my heart for Emo's pizza. And so we had to do that. So I have made, and there's Oberle sausage I haven't had yet, which is from actually down where I'm from, but I think the grocery stores sell it. I may try to grab some and take it on the plane with me if I can. We'll talk about that later because we're running out of time. All right, that was the St. Louis segment. Boom, St. Louis. Coming to you from the Dominican Priory on Lafayette, right off the Farty Far here in St. Louis. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. You are listening to The Counter Position.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, enough with the musing about my location and my trips down memory lane and my observations about how my experience of this place has changed. Who cares? You don't care. No one cares about that kind of thing. That's not true. Some of you do care about when I do that kind of thing. All right. So I heard a quote on Friday. So I've had a really interesting weekend. Three events and then an article came into my life over the weekend, and they lined up under the same kind of rubric. Right. So, I want to go through these events. And so the first event that I want to talk about is on Friday, my friends, Elizabeth, Rizzo and Alex Higby got married. So now they are Mr. and Mrs. Alex Higby or Alex and Elizabeth Higby. And massive shout out to you kids. I am so happy. It was an absolutely gorgeous wedding at it was at St. Catherine of Siena and over on Federal, and I always forget how beautiful that church is. It is just an absolutely gorgeous church. They just don't build them like that anymore. Note to self, I mean, or note to anyone listening, if you're going to build a church or remodel a church, make them beautiful. Beauty matters. The beautiful is the visible form of the good. It's really substantial. It really, 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 really matters. Do that. So Alex and Elizabeth were getting married. And my three favorite priests, hands down, in Denver we're all celebrating the Mass. So Monsignor Bernie Schmitz, my old pastor at Mother of God, is the vicar of clergy. He's had so many hats, too many hats in the diocese. The guy is an incredible preacher himself, one of the most solid, sober, insightful confessors I've ever had. I really want to find a way to make him my spiritual director. I love this guy. One of my best friends in the world, Father Michael O'Loughlin, the pastor of Holy Protection Byzantine. He's been on the show. Holy Protection, the Mother of God, Byzantine Catholic Church. Ho Pro Mogo. Frollo from Ho Pro Mogo was there too. So you guys have heard Frollo before because I've had him on the show and I talk about him all the time. And of course, the lovely and talented Father Brian Larkin, pastor of Our Lady of Lourdes, the Western Catholic Novus Ordo powerhouse of young adult shenanigans and renewal that is Our Lady of Lourdes, right there across from Harvard Gulch Park on ILF and Logan. So I think maybe the best preacher in Denver. Father Brian Larkin is an amazing preacher. And maybe it's not just how good he is. He preaches in a style that is more what I'm used to from being a revert from Protestantism. He preaches in a style that I miss, that is just beautiful. And he's the real deal. And so Father Brian Larkin was he was the primary celebrant. The other two were concelebrating, and he's the one that did the homily and witnessed their marriage and all that. So he said a ton of beautiful stuff in the homily, but the one thing that I came away with, and this is going to be the theme of the show today, is he said a quote from Hans Urs von Balthasar: "Love wants to make a vow." That is amazing. Love wants to make a vow, and that is, I think that the three events that I interacted with over the weekend, that was the common theme. And that was a wedding of two close friends of mine. A friend of mine, Matthew Peterson, and his wife Mary lost their infant son, Joseph, to SIDS, I believe. He just stopped breathing. They took him to the hospital and he died. And he was a little 5 weeks old. Just brutal. Absolutely brutal. And then, of course, I'm in St. Louis for, among other things, the ordination of my friend, originally Ryan Wolford, who is now Father Reginald Wolford, OP. So if you were listening to the show, interview's a strong word. I hung out with on the air my friend Father Reginald yesterday. We had a freewheeling conversation yesterday. So watching him go through this process and seeing his family and all the people around him and the different people who have meant something in his life was huge. So let's start with, the theme is love wants to make a vow. So the first one we see is that you have these vocation decisions in your life, right? You know, you're trying to figure out what in the world to do with yourself. You're trying to figure out if you're doing it right. You're saying what is the path that is going to take me to holiness? What is the path that's going to make me a saint? What is that path? And then you're trying to do that. The normal path, the natural path, as it were, the path that is the normal mode of engagement for this kind of process in our species, in our type of being, is family. You don't have, regardless of religion or whatever, you don't have to tell people to be attracted to each other. You don't have to the opposite sex and to come together and to make children and to care about them and to sacrifice and work hard to make sure that they do well. You don't have to tell people to do that. That's a natural thing. Now we do it different. We do it in a way that is beyond just kind of a animal desire to rear and to make and protect offspring to ensure the species or whatever. There's way more to it than that, but there is that aspect to it. We naturally want to come together and make children, right? And so permanence even is there's a natural fittingness to it, a natural argument to it, but permanence and fruitfulness. The reason that, on a natural level at least, the reason that people make these vows and agree to unbreakable permanence in this relationship is because it's not about them. It's about creating a stable, safe, real environment that is that as much as you can make it is predictable and solid and stable for the rearing and sending out into the world of children. Family, marriage is for the sake of family. Now, that doesn't mean that if you can't have kids and you decide not to adopt, that you're just selfish and horrible and whatever. Marriage can take a lot of forms. People that are in this marriage equality movement think that we as Catholics think that there's only the only way that you can have a marriage that really matters, that's really true, is if two young people who have never had sex with anyone else get together after having a big wedding with a white dress, and then they work as hard as they can to fill up a 14-passenger van as quickly as possible and homeschool all of them, then send them to one of four Catholic colleges in America. That's just not, that's not the full picture. That's not what we're claiming. But love wants to make a vow. Love wants to bind oneself to. Love wants to be with. One wants to make permanent. One wants to give of itself. Love wants to give itself, right? And when love gives itself in that deepest human way, the way that we are designed to give ourselves, then it's fruitful. And so that moment happens. We're created in the image of God, in that we're rational. And we have wills, we have an interior, we have a spiritual dimension, and we're persons. But God is a Trinity, and the great theological development of John Paul II is that he sees that we primarily image God in the family as a communio personarum, a communion of persons, and that this love, where there's this mutual, complete self-gift, and the love between those two is embodied in a third that emerges from that love, that is embodied in that, that embodies that love. That is the Trinity. And we as a family, when that third comes as an embodiment of the love between the two, it is when we finally can kind of take a little bit of a breath, because now we are experiencing the depth and reality of imaging God in the way that we can, in its full, the fullest way we can, right? And we have that desire to create. We have that desire to be like God. And the closest we can get to creating, not making, the closest we can get to creating is in making children. So that we want to, love wants to make a vow. Love wants to bind itself. All right, so let's go to the break. When we get back, we're going to keep working on this. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so the theme of today's show is a Hans Urs von Balthasar quote. Hans Urs von Balthasar was a Swiss theologian. He started off with the Jesuits, left, started his own lay community called the Community of St. John, I believe. And they were, or the Johannine community is what they called it. He is a prolific, amazing theologian, a close friend of Joseph Ratzinger, who was later Pope Benedict the 16th. That's hard to say. And started the journal Communio with Ratzinger. Von Balthasar did, and which is still in several editions for different countries today. A profound, complex, and beautiful and controversial theologian, Hans Urs von Balthasar. If I had to kind of put the quick stamp on kind of who, you know, pigeonhole what he is, he's the prophet of beauty in some senses. He's the great theologian of beauty. His theological aesthetics are the core of his thought, it seems to me. And he's written maybe more theology about beauty than anybody else. And I'm constantly getting inundated. In fact, I have another quote I'm going to try to look up during the next break. So funny, two Larkins, two von Balthasar quotes. Not related. Deacon Nick Larkin, listener to The Counterposition. Shout out, Deacon Nick. Sent me a von Balthasar quote, did he send it, or did he just put it on the I think he sent it to me on Facebook. Anyway, I saw it from him on Facebook. I think he commented on something I had. Anyway, so love wants to make a vow is the quote. And so I'm talking about a wedding I went to on Friday where these two people, one of which who has been away, was away from the faith and came back and felt a transforming power of mercy and forgiveness, and the beautiful transforming ability of God to completely remake you when you give yourself to Him, and when you turn back to Him and ask Him to remake you, to bring you into relationship with Him, and you want to live in accord with the way that He desires and the way He designed. And then the other was this, like, had just been a fairly solid, just best I can understand, Catholic their entire life. And just one of the best people I know, and just didn't go through the phase of getting it wrong and acquiring a bunch of scars and stuff. And these two, in some ways, are very different people. But they got married, and as I saw the relationship develop, it was just such a beautiful combination, how beautifully they complemented each other. And now they're married, and I cannot wait to see how they grow into each other. I can't wait to see their children. I can't wait to see how that is. And it's a perfect example of that love wants to make a vow. Love wants to commit oneself, right? And so then children happen. Now, I want to move on, because when you love, love is risk. Love is deep risk. You open yourself for a level of hurt and a level of pain from the moment. The moment that you see a girl and you're like, oh, I really want to ask her out. I mean, I really would love to take her on some dates and see if there's something there. You know, I mean, how old is she? I'm kind of old. She's really pretty. From the moment you go, you want to just say, hey, would you like to get some dinner? You are risking. Love requires bravery. Why? Because love inherently has risk as part of its makeup, right? So you say, hey, and you ask, and you may be rejected. And then you try, and maybe it works out. Maybe you date for a while. Some you try, and then in the end, it's too hard and you mess it up or something, or it just, you realize it's not there, but you know, there's a, even if there's no rejection, even if it's mutual, you go, ah, man, I really got my hopes up on that one. It really seemed like it, you know. Maybe you never pull the trigger. Maybe you see there's too great a distance. Maybe you love someone deeply, but kind of from afar. And then they don't reject you, but they move on. And now that's not a possibility. And that's a risk even. Not acting is a risk. But we can't not have this risk. Because this risk is love, and love is what we're designed for. So you're going to risk. Now you can risk the pain of never loving, of never risking that other possible pain, and never feeling that, and never experiencing that, never connecting. Or you can risk it and connect and have it, but then that opens you up, right? So my friends, Matt and Mary, had a little 5-week-old baby over the weekend, and I was sitting in the airport, and my plane got delayed. Sidebar, massive shout out to Perry West. I just want to publicly thank Perry West. I was just not thinking. I was had a bunch on my mind, and I came home from that wedding, and I was working on some stuff and packing and frustrated with trying to pack a suit into a small carry-on. And, you know, I'm a big guy, and my suit doesn't fold in the same way. And then I know how to fold a suit and make it not wrinkle in a bag, but my bag was too small, and it was frustrating me, and it was making me mad, and I happened to drag, you know, this, I was like going on this trip, and it was just, this packing was hitting me, and there was this, it was basically igniting a bunch of frustration I'm having about other things in my life and insecurities that are going on right now. And I was just frustrated, and I made a mistake with the timing, and I looked and I realized, I asked Perry to drop me off at the rail station just a few blocks from our house so I could take the A line out to the airport. And I realized that I wasn't going to make my flight if I did that. Like, I had jacked up the time. So Perry, even though he was supposed to be going to Aspen, dropped what he was doing and drugged me all the way out to the airport and dropped me off. And it was a beautiful, kind thing to do. And it turns out I didn't need that. The security that said it was like 25 minutes, I went through security in 10 minutes, and then the flight got delayed. So I'm sitting in the New Belgium pub. They're eating a sandwich and having a really bad glass of wine, which, you know, public letter to New Belgium. You guys are a craft beer company. It's amazing. You have great beer. Why would you serve such bad wine? I just don't do that. Don't do that. There's good wine that's affordable, that is more reflecting of who you are as a company. And there's sidebar on New Belgium. I love New Belgium. Serve me the crap wine for $8 in the airport. I'm looking through Facebook, and a friend of mine is like, hey, could really use some prayers. My our baby is just stopped breathing and went to the emergency room in an ambulance. And I'm like, oh my gosh, right? And so I saw there was like 300 comments, and so I hit it to go comment and go, hey, I'm on it. And the comments at some point, I never saw an announcement made, but the comments at some point went from, we're praying for you. Oh, we are so sorry for your loss. I mean, we're lifting your family up and your grief and all that. And I could tell by the comment, I could never find a comment where anybody said anything different. But somebody had gotten the point somewhere along the line, or maybe there was a comment that was deleted that I missed at some point. But obviously the child had died. And I was just like, I was just sitting in this loud airport with this bad wine and this good sandwich, and there's this couple sitting next to me, And I was already annoyed because this guy was just telling his girl these stories about something, you know, what they happened on vacation or whatever. And it's like, and the guy is just cussing a blue streak, dropping F-bomb after F-bomb at the top of his lungs in the middle of a restaurant. There's children all around and stuff. And I'm thinking, God, how coarse our society has gotten. And I'm just already kind of on edge. And I look at this and I'm just sitting here in this like weird environment of an airport with this guy just talking. And I guess I must have just been staring at him and blanking out, because he looked at me, he goes, you know, and he said, so I don't even know what he said. I just got realized that he'd addressed me, you know, can I help you or what's your problem or whatever. And I'm like, oh, sorry. I just sitting here on Facebook and realize that a friend of mine's child had just died. And so it was just, this is a bizarre scene. So I want to talk about that a little bit when we get back, for sure. When you love, when you do that thing, when you risk, when you put yourself out there and you follow the design of both nature and supernature, and you give yourself deeply in love, when you give yourself to another in a way that allows that love to become fruitful and real, you open yourself. You open yourself for the possibility of some deep pain. And I saw that clearly by seeing my close friend lose his child. But what do you do? I mean, the love that I saw pour out, and the love of the rest of his family that I've seen over the years and everything, how could you not risk? There's an equal pain to not risking, as I said before. So, well, let's go to the break. When we get back, I want to wrap this around to the rest of the weekend and an article that Michael Miley sent me. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so we've gone through the joy of a wedding. The theme of the day's show is love wants to make a vow. So a quote from Hans Urs von Balthasar. We've gone through a wedding. Two very different people, different stories, different deep interactions with the mercy of God. One of healing and one of sustaining and holding and protecting. We have my friends who got married and had kids. And they had this beautiful new baby, and the baby died. And you feel that deep pain. So risk, I mean, even when something tragic like this doesn't happen, there's a deep risk. The main risk with having children is you don't have your life is your own anymore. You have to, it becomes this immense amount of work, and your life becomes about someone else, right? So that brings us to the third event that I had that we've already talked about some, was the ordination of my friend Ryan, who's now Father Reginald Wolford. This guy, I've lived with him in an apartment and then in a house. And then we were roommates in the Canons Regular in a religious order that I discerned with, and he was a member of. So I've been roommates three times, once in religious life with this guy. I've been through his vocation search. We've looked for people to marry together. We've sold wine and stayed up late together and surfed and drank beer and just everything. And then I was going through my vocation discernment while he was in his vocation discernment, and he pulled the trigger and went to religious life. I didn't for a while. I ended up discerning with the same order he was in. We were roommates during that time. We sit outside and have a cigarette and look at the skyline of Santa Paula and have the deepest conversations about God's will and what we were doing. And to see him, he made the decision that that charism didn't fit him, that that wasn't his home. And he made the hard decision to switch and became a Dominican. That took an extra 3 years. And now, this weekend, he has entered into, he had his wedding. He made a vow. Love wants to make a vow. And he gave himself completely in, unapologetically, but you know what, he can't take it back. I'm trying to find a word today. I've been struggling with words all weekend. He can't, in a way that is, you know, unable to be reversed, irreversible. That's a good word for it. A vow. You know, what is he doing? What is that risk? He's giving up the thing that we naturally desire. Hey, insight for you, in case you, for some reason, you were just raised in kind of the old school Catholicism or whatever, and you think the priests are of a different order or something. No, priests are human beings, and they see the good of marriage probably more than most of us see it. And they see that they know the struggles and the risk that is there. But it's most of the guys that you see with a collar on, especially these younger guys that grew up in a post-theology of the body world, they really see the deep, deep spiritual goodness and the natural goodness of family. And they've probably been through a period where they really, really want a family. They may want a family now, but they've discerned a call to not have what they want, or maybe they want this more. When people discern, they have to figure these things out. So they've made a risk in the sense that, for one thing, they have given up something that maybe they wanted deeply, that society wants them deeply, that nature wants them to want deeply. And they've also risked entering into a life to where, if they don't embrace it to the level of achieving real contemplative, fruitful solitude in their celibacy, they'll just be a grouchy bachelor. They'll just be forsaken. They won't be espoused. You know, they'll be just a bachelor that is not married. They're not celibate. They're just alone. And so there's a risk of, like, can I open myself up? But you can't do that. You can do some of the right things, but there's another person in that marriage, and it's God, right? So you have to open yourself up, and you have to trust that your beloved will show up and live out that wedding, so to speak, you know? And what is that wedding? Why? Well, how can we use those nuptial terms for an ordination, for the life of celibate priesthood? Because it is a gift of self, and it is this, here's a big word, eschatological. It means the end things. It points towards. St. Paul says that when men and women come together, that is a great mystery that speaks about the relationship between Christ and the church. And so it points to that. That's what marriage is about. That's what sex is about. It's about that reality, the meaning behind it, the ultimate thing that it points to, the thing that it signifies, the thing that we participate in through it if we do it well, is that final embracing kind of communion in the beatific vision between God and his church, right? So a person who has a celibate vocation is, if they're doing it right, if they're opening themselves up, if they're risking themselves and being vulnerable to God, then they are experiencing that reality in advance. They are living as a sign that a sign that points to the fact that this is a sign, that marriage is a sign. They're living that reality that marriage points to in a way now to remind us that that's what it's about. Celibacy, in a sense, is about marriage. It's a sign to these people that are married, that are procreating and becoming one in this unity of aspect, that that whole thing is about this, and they live that reality. Now, no one thinks about it like that anymore. And no one thinks about family like that anymore. Well, not no one, but most people. And as a result, my friend Michael Miley sent me an article that was from the CORE Project, which is Christopher West's project about the theology of the body. And he was commenting on an article from Rooster, therooster.com, which I don't even know if I want to post this article. It's so crass. Now, I'm not surprised. The Rooster is like this magazine you see in college towns where they tell you just pictures of people in local watering holes like partying and hooking up and whatever. It's like totally like young kind of, you know, hedonist culture, mostly in college towns. And it's just very, it's kind of the dark, shallow side of the millennial thing. And, but they point out that data from the Urban Institute shows that birth rates among women in their 20s have declined 15% between 2007 and 2012. And they started talking to all these millennial women, and they start giving them all these reasons that they don't want to have kids. Like, the world kind of sucks now and we're poor as hell, like student loans and all that. Traffic and high rents make life miserable for the people that already exist. Pregnancy is not hot. They just don't like the way it looks or the idea of it. It just freaks them out. It all seems so strange to them because these days people have kids for selfish reasons. Great. We'll ruin them with terrible parenting. These kids have been helicopter parented so hard that they think that they have to do that. They want careers. And they're like, they're just not ashamed of it. They want careers and they're just not apologizing. We're fine. I don't want a career. Get over it. They don't think they're not going to fix anything. And then they say, we don't even want a reason. It's our bodies. We can do what we want with them. It's our decision to make. Now, here, this whole everything that's underneath all of these reasons in this Rooster article are they are, how to speak, two things. They are either a disconnect from nature or a fear of risk. Now, there are some very real problems here, no doubt. The world is scary right now. There is terrorism. There is craziness going on. Turn on the news. We have, it's a mess. It scares the hell out of me too. But that's risk, right? It is, if you don't have the reasons why this is important, why this matters, and all you can see is the downside or selfish reasons and the risk, then of course you're going to reject that. Now, I think this article is really, really pessimistic because I see a ton of millennials, especially kind of in that millennial hipster kind of world where pregnancy is seen as so beautiful and amazing, and you're seeing young people getting married again, like at a young age. You see family being kind of lifted up. And so I think that this is Rooster is kind of over in that. They're the tender of magazines. So they're kind of in that party culture. But
oh goodness, we're out of time. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for playing, guys. Appreciate it.
I take your place in marble stone. I take your place in marble stone.